You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live,
Geek Nerd Tech, featuring a weekly roundup of tech news and gossip.
Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live,
Geek Nerd Tech.
Yes. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech.
Yes, sir.
You know, the show we break down nerd culture and tech news from a black geek perspective.
All day long.
I got one black geek here.
All the way. Signed up. Yes, sir.
I'm a black geek. I'm joined with my man, as always, Mr. Keely Shine. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing great, man. Glad to, you know, be co-hosting the show with you, man. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
My man.
I'm fantastic. I'm my first week of CrossFit.
Yes, sir.
Trying to drop some pounds.
Man, I feel that, man.
I'll stop drinking for like 5 minutes.
We gotta be healthy, man. We gotta stay in shape.
We'll see. I might drink tonight, though.
We have someone in the studio, though.
Man, we have a very, very special guest. My brother, my friend.
John Muir
High School alum, UCLA Bruin.
Talk to me.
And Los Angeles Clipper, Ryan Hollins.
Yes, sir.
What's good, brother? Appreciate you guys for having me on.
Of course.
Absolutely. You know I'm a little black nerd on the low, too. So, I'm going to fit right in.
Don't have to be on the low, brother. Okay. You let it hang out.
Let's talk. Let's talk.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So, exactly. That's why you're here, because not only, you know, you are, local hero, NBA star, but you are also, like us, a nerd, a geek, in there, and a techie.
Indeed.
So we'll get into that. We'll talk a lot about that, how you feel about your relationship to the nerd culture and the tech culture, mm-hmm. as well as we'll get into some Clipper stuff, and we'll do our topics as well, and you're just going to kick it with us the whole time.
Yeah, let's go.
Appreciate it. So, man, lots to talk about. I mean, we have a full week, right?
Full clip, man.
So we want to start with the Grammys. I mean, it's kind of old news at this point. We don't have the benefit of doing this show. Grammys were Sunday. We're here Friday, but man, there was so much to talk about from a tech perspective, because you have a convergence of the technology and music and our culture, nerd culture, pop culture, all mixed into one. And the Grammys. And the thing about the Grammys this year, in the music industry this year, is it has been overtaken by social media and streaming. And mm-hmm. there's a ton of new ways to be able to receive the Grammys, to follow the Grammys, to watch the Grammys.
To interact with.
I mean, artists are tweeting as they're getting stuff live. You're hearing about things streaming. You're watching it online. Mashable's covering it real time and condensing it down to like 2 minutes or whatever they're doing. So there's a lot there. And it's no surprise that, you know, this Grammys was the highest rated Grammys since, I think it was like 1992.
A cool minute.
Highest rated Grammys since 1992, and it has a lot to do, not because of what was happening in music, obviously, but more because the eyeballs that were on it because of what's happening through social media.
Yeah, the technology is to a place where, you know, how the audience interacts and interfaces with the content is much different than in traditional sense. You would just watch TV and, you know, go to work or go to school the next day and give your opinion, versus now people are giving their opinion in real time.
Yep.
They're expressing things, they're posting things, they're sending things. And so, like the whole, like you said, the whole convergence of technology and social media mixed with the arts and culture, it just allows for a great conversation.
Right. It did. So for you, I don't want to say what was your moment, your Grammy moment, because there was a lot of Grammy moments, and we all love Beyonce. I don't want to recap the show, because that's not the show we do.
Of course.
But I do want to ask you about what was your sort of tech-related or social media-related moments for you?
I think it's more of a social media moment for me, and it would definitely be the Macklemore, you know, Kendrick Lamar thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel, you know, Macklemore is a talented artist. You know, I won't take anything away from his artistry and his ability to, you know, communicate through the art form of hip hop. Mm-hmm. But clearly, to me, and to a lot of people, Kendrick Lamar had the more favorable album, you know, the more true talent, more of a real MC in terms of, you know, what he communicated through his album this year. And just for him not to get, you know, a Grammy, being nominated 7 times and not to get one Grammy, I think he was robbed. And I think it speaks to the Grammys. Like, the Grammys to me are rigged. It's co-opted. Like, it's to promote, you know, the artists that they want to promote. And I feel, you know, maybe historically or traditionally, the Grammys were more about, you know, true artistry, composition, songwriting, you know, execution of how you perform versus now it's based on popularities, based on how many people are tweeting you or downloading you versus if you have real talent.
Yeah. Kendrick Lamar would not be the popular win. Right. He's not the popular vote. You know, that, I mean, you can take that as money at this point, and that goes across every venue almost. Everything is so money driven, and it's not so much just to the raw, pure form of who the best is. You know, who's the most, you know, it's who sold the most albums, you know, whose singles getting blasted, you know, and you're hearing that Macklemore track all over the place right now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I mean, like, I had a real. Probably I'm okay with I'm all right Macklemore. I'm not really like hating on Macklemore like some people are, but I do have a real problem, you know, being an old school hip hop head, looking across at the Grammy, every rap category, every hip hop category with Macklemore's name in it. He won. He swept.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's something he wasn't nominated in the category that Jay-Z was in. He won. Right. But he won everything. And, you know, on one hand, it's like, okay, congratulations, you win these Grammys. But when you're faced with, when you see what the competition is, and then especially at Kendrick Lamar, it's really difficult to have a national sort of celebrating music, a conversation that says this guy is the predominant guy in hip hop.
Exactly.
And I don't want to get into necessarily the race thing about it, but it is prominent. This is a white dude.
But we know the Grammys are not saying who the best in hip-hop is.
Of course.
You can't say I got a Grammy for hip-hop and you're the best. You may be recognized to the world, but to the hip-hop community, you're not the best.
Sure.
The best album, clearly, by that.
There was an infographic that I checked out, you know, after the Grammys, post-Grammys, that went back to 1996 for who was won, you know, best rap album. And the infographic showed that a third of the people that have won that Grammy award were white.
Oh, yeah.
And most of them went to, obviously, Eminem and now Macklemore.
Sure.
A third, though.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
What does that mean? If you want to win a Grammy and rap, be white. Start rapping. Steve LeMieux, start rapping.
Let's go back. When did they
at originally... the VHL rocking this? I don't know. I'm bad.
When did they start giving a rap Grammy? That's an accomplishment in itself.
I remember this because this is back in my day. Yeah. I want to say it was. I predate both of y'all. I'm old. But I want to say it was like 1990 or 1989 or 90. It's somewhere in there because there was a whole, you know, Fresh Prince and Jazzy Jeff and all these folks were really, really sort of said there was no category.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but now there's a category. Then it was off the show. They wouldn't put it on the show. And that just shows you how the culture's changed. And like this is the dominant story. And just to bring it back to Macklemore, the reason why we're talking about this is because we're talking about the most socially tweeted moments.
Right.
And you know, back to that's one of some stats real quick. You know, Facebook had 13 million. Let's see if it's right. Facebook had 13.5 million interactions on the Grammys, 6.5 million users, you know, on the Grammys alone. There were 15.2 million tweets during the East Coast alone.
That's
broadcast
crazy.
Of the Grammys. So, and I mean, people were really, really in that conversation. And what they were talking about was Macklemore winning and Kendrick Lamar losing.
Right.
So it's kind of this weird thing that the people have spoken out in the world of sort of who they thought should be whatever, and taking nothing away from Macklemore. Macklemore himself, famously, went and sent this tweet to Kendrick.
Right.
And said, man, you know, basically, you got robbed. I robbed you.
Yeah, he sent them a text message, and then he Instagrammed the text message and saying that, yo, you should have won. You got robbed. And what was really interesting about that, once that hit, you know, people's radar, Kendrick Lamar's Spotify went up 99%.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. To show the, you know, the power of, you know,
Macklemore.
That conversation.
Well, what you have is these people who are these Macklemore fans. Some people, some teenage girls and guys and casual fans who are like, I like that Macklemore,
right?
And like, wait, who's this Kendrick Lamar?
Exactly.
Macklemore's talking to him. So then that's what, you know. I don't know what that voice is.
Let's,
I don't know whose voice that was, but
let's give hats off to Macklemore for doing that. That's
absolutely
huge, man.
Yeah.
That's huge for someone to win their first Grammy and then go and say, hey, I didn't deserve this. This other guy should have won. That's huge. You have to respect that.
I do respect that.
I do respect it. Again, I don't want to turn this into a Macklemore bashing session.
Right, right. No,
he's
no,
doing
no.
his thing.
You respect
you
that?
You know, I definitely respect him.
Question. So since he went and said, I don't deserve the Grammy, does that proof now that we should challenge the system of who the winners are
and how it's judged. I mean, I definitely think that opens up the conversation because, I mean, in terms of the hip-hop community, we've never really, like you've already said, held the Grammys as a metrics for for success or for excellence.
No.
That's why Jay-Z, when he accepted the Grammy, he was like, oh, hey, this will be a sippy cup for Blue. Yeah. Like, we could care less about the Grammys. Yeah. So, but it definitely sparks the conversation, like, man, this is true talent. Why isn't true talent being recognized?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to get into this, but the Grammys is a sham. Yeah. Shamocracy. I mean, it's really, I understand the recording industry's need to, you know, and this is something that a colleague of mine, Andy Greenwald, wrote about, but over at Grantland, but it's like, I understand the music industry's need to sort of have this big tent, a field of like, hey, we're all in this together. Willie Nelson is over here with Macklemore, and you know, we're all one big musical family. And so that's why you have all these mashups and this fake attempt to put everyone together. But at the end of the day, it's really about the music industry. It's not really their peers voting on each other. It's the music industry putting forth who they think is the person.
Yeah.
It's not really a popularity contest like the American Music Awards. It's not really a democratized system. It's sort of saying, like, usually in the past it's been based on these guys sold a lot of records, they moved a lot of units, they really helped out the music industry, so therefore we're going to reward them with the Grammy. So that's why you have people like Lorde and people like, you know, and Macklemore and Ryan Lewis winning Grammys. And, I'm not mad at it, but it's like, I don't know what we expect from the Grammys.
Yeah, that's it.
True.
That's it.
True.
You know? So, but it is still entertaining. It is a show and we'll watch it. But what's interesting about it is we're all in this conversation, all talking about it, and it will continue to be that way for a long time. And next year, I think the ratings will be even higher because we'll be even more social media.
Yep.
The only thing I want to mention too is, yeah, Mashable did this thing. The Grammys was 3 hours long. That's a long ass time. But so Mashable has this cool thing where you can watch a Grammy in 5 minutes. You know, basically,
wow.
They have
so a condensed version.
And they'll take you through it in 5 minutes. There's a lot of things through social media you can go to recap the Grammys and figure out what you want and stay in that conversation and be in that conversation. So, it is what it is. I'm okay with the Grammys. You know, I don't know. That's all I got.
Hey. Grammys.
All right.
See you next year.
See you next year. But before that, we did have a chance, you know, Grammy related, we actually had a chance to sit down with one of my favorite artists, one of your favorite artists as well.
Absolutely.
My man, Allo Black, who has a new album coming out. He did this really cool video, interactive video. Speaking of tech, he did this video in conjunction with Lincoln where he shot with probably like, I don't know, how many cameras? Like 30, 40 cameras or more?
It was a gang of cameras.
There's a lot of cameras that they're rolling. They roll all the real time. Basically, they shot this music video where you as the user can be the director. So if you're watching it and you want to watch the whole time, you want to watch Allo Black do his thing, you can do that. If you want to watch a dancer stretch and follow them through their process, you can do that.
Man, if I had that.
it really is a truly interactive experience because the video is rolled in real time. You can watch it, but you watch it 40 times and have 40 different experiences.
I think it's cool because, like, you know, a typical, you know, music video or even film, like, it's told from, you know, one perspective. It's told from a protagonist perspective. Right. Or the narrative is just singular versus this experience, like this multiple narratives. Like you're experiencing, like you said, the dancer. You're experiencing the love interest. You're experiencing Allo Black as a performer. Like, and so just to show all those angles and show all those stories intertwined is very creative and highly sophisticated, like visually and just using the music to. Mm-hmm. To compliment that, I think it's dope. It's a dope tech story.
So we sat out with him. We talked. We, you know, Keith and I went out and shot some together. You know, I interviewed. You won't see me on camera because my director, Keely Shine, said we don't need to see you on camera, which I still disagree with. But we did. We did have Allo Black, and we did shoot it up, and we have a little bit of it right now. We have the whole thing actually. We have to play it right now for you.
I'm Allo Black, and you're watching Geek Nerd Tech. Today we're shooting an interactive music video for a song called Love is the Answer. And the concept is there's a concert that's going to be prepared in the foyer of a beautiful hotel. It's a very nice antique, old-style hotel. And there are multiple cameras filming everything that's happening around. So what you, as a viewer, get to do is choose your adventure in the video, but it's all running contemporaneously. From the time the music starts, you can either watch me coming through, getting ready to go to my performance, or you can see the dancers getting ready as they're preparing and stretching. I mean, I think it's a brilliant idea. It,
quite often, you know, visual aspects are just two-dimensional. You only get to see what the director wants you to see. But in this case, you get to direct it. You get to direct the video. I'm a big technology nerd, so I like the idea that this can happen. I mean, of course, it's very traditional forms of filmmaking, cinematography, but what is different is giving access to multiple viewpoints, using technology to give you that extra leverage to be able to choose what you want to see. And if you want to watch the video multiple times just so you can see the full story in each, you know, in each camera, then that'll help you get the full picture as well. But I definitely think I'll continue to do these kinds of interesting collaborations. Working with Lincoln's really cool. They got the right people involved to come up with the best ideas. They have, you know, the highest production quality available. And that's really what it's about for me, is quality. Making music that touches, moves, and inspires. And finding a way to become a friend of my fans, giving people something that can last them the rest of their lives. And so, you know, being able to partner with Lincoln on this is just, for me, it's like, if you're going to choose to work with anybody, you choose to work with people who understand quality and delivery. What works best for me is a folk soul performance, at least vocally, lyrically, and melodically. But I'm a big fan of hip-hop music and contemporary pop music. I'm a big fan of old forms of classic rock or classic soul. So I decided I wanted music that had the sonic fidelity of a Dr. Dre album. I wanted the soulful musicality of a Stevie Wonder album. I wanted the edge and the, you know, the kind of grit and attitude of a Jimi Hendrix album. This may be old, but it sounds new, is the way that I perform with my vocal, which took me years to learn, but the best place for it is this folk soul presentation. Some people say a little bit like Al Green, some people say a little bit like Bill Withers, but those are my teachers. What would you expect, you know? That's where I learned. Hey, I'm Aloe Black, and you're watching Black Hollywood Live. I didn't know I was gone.
Cool.
Yeah.
That happened.
Yeah, I just want to shout out Aloe Black and Lincoln Motor Company for giving us, you know, the access to be able to shoot and do our thing, man. It was a great experience sitting down with Aloe and, you know, getting his insights about technology and
absolutely
music. Are you a fan of Aloe Black?
Put me on game. I've been under a rock.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. I need a dollar. I need a dollar. You heard that?
How's it go?
Oh, that was pretty terrible. I can't believe I did that.
I'm not really familiar. Can you go a little more?
I can't do it. I put myself out there. I can't do it.
I need dollar. I can't do it either.
Okay, now I'm with it.
Okay, cool.
So, I know.
Yeah.
But this is what runs in my mind when I see that. When I see the video, I'm thinking back to as a kid watching videos, and you see that chick in the video, mm-hmm. that just, she blows you away.
Yep.
And you like, then they cut to another scene. You're like, no! And then they cut back to her, and you're like, oh! And,
yes.
And you just wish, like, yo, I watch her the whole video.
Yep.
Or I watch, you know, whatever. I don't want to see this dude singing with his shirt off. I want to see the chick in the background dancing.
Good yep. point, bro.
But
good
at the
point.
Same point, if I could see her the whole time, would I really want to see her?
Yeah.
Would I see her, you know, just that you see that flash, okay, she's back.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So what, does it taint it? Does it take it away or what, you
well,
know?
Well, it's experiential, right? So you can change the experience every time, because if that video, as it's cut, you watch it, maybe it's a great piece of art. Like, let's take something, a great piece of art, like Thriller. You watch Thriller, you watch it 100 times, it's going to be Thriller. But if I can go back, I've seen Thriller probably about 2,000 times. But if I could go back and be like, you know, today I want to watch the zombie in the corner, like, you know, then that's fine, because it may change that experience for me and make it brand new for me. So it's that. And so that way the music video itself and the music has a shelf life creatively, but then you can do whatever you want to do. You want to watch the girl, watch the girl, you know. That's kind of the thing where things are going. It's going to a level where we as users and viewers, we can't call ourselves viewers anymore. We're all users now.
Participants
and users will be engaging in every aspect. You know, I might come out and like shoot a free throw. I miss, but you know. But shout out to Aloe Black. A negative shout out to Achilles Shine for not putting me in that video, but that's all right. I'm right here. You can see me right here. So thank you, Aloe Black. So that was that. I do want to just move on to we're gonna stick with the music for a second. So I do want to talk about the Beats audio, the Beats versus Spotify. I mean, you know, Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine finally launched beats that happened right before the Grammys, yeah. like right in time for the Grammys. It's been talked about all through 2013, has some delays, supposed to be launched at the end of the year 2013. Mm-hmm. We finally rolled it out in January. Highly, highly, highly anticipated music service. And, you know, I've played around a little bit. Have you messed with it?
Not yet.
Okay, so, right now we're talking about sort of how does it stack up to Spotify, you know? And, I mean, you know, basically, if you're not familiar, it's a music sharing service. It's a music, just like Spotify. You can, for free, go and have access to basically any song.
20
million songs. And if you pay a monthly premium, you can have those songs on all of your devices, is what it is. Beats is a very similar thing. The thing with Beats is they do a curated. They have a bunch of curated playlists by celebrities and musicians and other folks.
Tastemakers.
So if you don't know what you're looking for, you can say, damn, I wonder what Ryan Hollins listened to.
Exactly.
And then you can find Ryan's list on there. Now, Spotify does that too, but it's just not built on that platform.
It's not as personal. It's not as emotional.
Right.
I think what makes the Beats music dope is that not only does it provide for you like the nostalgia if you have like old songs that you want, you know, to find and listen to and interact with, but it also gives you, you know, that true music discovery process. So it's going to give you the best of both worlds. And so it has this feature where you can type in a phrase or you can type in like a couple keywords of what your emotion is at the time or what you're doing at the time. And then Beats Music will recommend a playlist or recommend an influencer who, you know, will kind of like curate whatever you're feeling with music, which is really dope. And that's what Spotify does not do. So
I think it's your phone, Ryan. That's at some point, too.
Is that the buzzing?
It's cool. I agree. Yeah. And I think that, like, just run down this comparison real quick is you've got on Spotify, they're both the free version, but on the Beats version, you only get 7 days for free. Spotify gives you 30 days or unlimited
trial.
Spotify, with Beats, they're not really trying to give you nothing for free.
Not at all.
It's kind of like you got to pay for it because we think our shit's hot. But, you know, you've got 7 days unless you're an AT&T customer, then you get a 30-day trial.
Right.
So, I mean, I got to give the edge to Spotify on that one. On the paid versions, they're both kind of hot, but what Beats does do is they offer a family plan. So if you want to have a lot of devices, a lot of people, it really dramatically decreases the price for the amount of devices you have. So if you're with a lot of people, Beats is definitely a way better version than Spotify in terms of that. That's concerned.
Right.
The only other thing is you cannot on your desktop. Beats doesn't have a desktop situation.
Yeah, it's only on mobile devices.
Which may be a smart move because you're not really trying to carry your computer around. But some people work at their desk and they want to log in. Mm-hmm. You can have your computer in there too. So Spotify on that one. But still, for me and also for a lot of folks, the overall winner is still at this point. Spotify is still hot for me. I don't know.
I would say Spotify is probably going to be the winner because statistically, paid users on Spotify only make up 20% of what, you know, of the user base, the total user base. 20% pay for Spotify. So most people are just using it for free versus Beats. You have no free option. You have to pay. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to be a turnoff to people. Like, why would I pay $10 a month when I can just use Spotify for free?
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's really interesting to me about, you know, these music streaming services versus like, you know, traditional radio where you have a music director or program director telling the audience what they're going to listen to is that you have the power, you have the control to, you know, of what you want, what content you want to listen to, what content you want to interface, and that these services are recommending based on your tastes or your emotions or your interests, I think is really, really cool.
I agree. Both services have 20 million songs plus. Both services have all the same things. It's really just about, I mean, Beats will grow. It does have the brand recognition. It is Dre. It is Jimmy Iovine. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know,
I got a question
we'll
for you.
I think I just love the competition personally. Right. Yeah. Because the more they compete, the more maybe a third party comes in and the more accessible things are going to be. The more the prices are lower, you know, the better the competition, essentially.
I mean, they've capped it at $10 a month, both at $10 a month. There are some other services coming in, so we'll see. Maybe we'll see the price drop. Because, like you said, you know, competition breeds lower prices in some cases.
Yeah, CD killed by iTunes. iTunes killed by Spotify. Who knows?
Let's kill iTunes.
Who knows if Beats will kill Spotify?
Okay. All right. Spotify kill iTunes?
I think so. I think more people are on Spotify than iTunes at all.
I've been off of iTunes for like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
You just feel getting ripped off every $13.99 for an album. Yeah. Every $1.29 or $0.99 per song.
I'm out.
As an athlete, you're always traveling, going different places. Like, how do you consume music? How do you listen to music? Like, kind of tell me your experience as it relates to music when you're traveling and doing stuff.
I'm more just convenient, so I have to throw it on the iPhone. Right. So with the iPhone, I have it everywhere I go. So there was the convenience of iTunes, but now you learn how to download songs or get it from another source. I've got the songs, available and, kind of make my playlist and whatnot. So, we plug up or in the locker room, I'll take my phone and, put it on a, sound dock and whatnot. And, we'll play music and hear it from there. But most of the guys hear it from their phones. We don't really have iPods or, so that's pretty much the wave.
Got you.
Convenience.
Got you. Cool. Well, I have one last question. Do you guys share playlists? Like, hey, yo, Blake, check out my playlist or check out, this mixtape that I'm into or whatever.
Just gonna make me confess, huh? Make me confess.
What happens inside the locker room.
I'm kind of like the team DJ, I guess.
Okay.
So, when we're on a plane, I'll have a playlist kind of set. Music, I think, I go back to making the CDs about 13 songs deep or, downloading certain songs and, putting my mixes together and putting the order in place and having the workout mix, the chill mix, the slow jam mix. So,
that's right.
I've always just been, a little low-key music head, So, I put the mixes together for the, for the airplane rides or I throw in a song, kind of before the game to get the guys going or, try to fill the mood out. So, I guess the unofficial team DJ.
Okay, we'll take it.
We need to get on Beats Music, man. Be a curator.
It's like creating some,
Make me work, right? fine-tune your craft. Fine-tune it. But now I put it out there, right?
That's right. Well, I want to, speaking of the number in that, I want to talk about when we have a Super Bowl coming up. We have a professional athlete here. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl a little bit as it relates to social media. And this is also, this will be the biggest, the most social, shared Super Bowl ever. I mean, Super Bowl already from a broadcast standpoint is always one of the most watched things in this country and around the world. The viewership is always through the roof and continues to get higher. But this year, we have some special things happening. Fox is actually going to stream it live for the first time. No money. You can just get your device if you have Wi-Fi, stream the Super Bowl from wherever you're at. That's the first time they're going to offer that. That is the way of the future. So everyone will have eyes. So the eyeballs will grow, and then the sharing and the talking about it will grow. This is definitely, the Super Bowl, I'm having a really, really, really hard time because I'm a 49er fan. So obviously I had a really hard time.
My man, I'm with you. Okay. I'm with you right now.
I had a real hard time. I actually still have not really done a lot of media consuming because it's really tough for me.
Still recovering. Both of y'all still recovering.
We'll get into that. But what is interesting, usually they have 2 weeks of, before the game. That last week is a really hard media now push that last week before. We've seen the traffic with this go again through the roof because not only do you have more outlets covering it, you have more. Mm-hmm. You have a bunch of credible websites like the one I work for, like Grantland, the one we work for, or all the other credible like Fox and ESPN and all those other places. Then you have the other ones like Deadspin and all those other guys who are in there as well. But it's not just sports website. It's everybody who's covering
everybody.
It. Every blog's covering. Everyone's an angle. So all those media credentials that went out, for years and years and years, we have all these random local TV stations and Japanese stations. Everybody came in. It's triple because now you have all these websites and blogs and podcasts and folks coming in as well. So it is a zoo over there in New York. It's the number one media market in the country. It's crazy right now.
That's amazing.
But what I want to ask you is that, on top of all that, you not only have all these people covering it, but you have the athletes themselves. The athletes themselves have now become reporters,
right?
Whether they are working for someone or not,
right?
Because they have a device in their hand at all times, or two, and they're walking around and they are tweeting, and
or there's a device in their face at all times because someone else is tweeting or Instagramming them.
I just saw so and so. He walked in the thing. I just walked in the thing, and I'm retweeting that. So talk to me a little bit about. That's a given, but as a professional athlete, talk to me a little bit about the proliferation of social media, as someone who is covered by the media, someone who is involved in it, how you control your own message. How does that work for you?
It's a tool. It's a tool, and it gives you your voice where the media was your voice, or somebody had to interview you for you to be able to talk, and you can go out and speak and, you know, gain followers. And, you know, obviously you'll speak during the time because it's going to grow your fan base. It's going to be an appropriate topic, or you're watching, you know, you're human. You know, I'm sitting back and I'm watching a game just like, you know, anybody else. And it's tricky too, because you can get in a lot of trouble. And as you've seen, athletes and some entertainers have gotten a lot of trouble by saying the wrong things on social media. And once they hit click send, it's gone, and, you know, they're paying for it, you know, from there on out. But, I mean, it's a great tool, and it's today's society, I think it just evens the playing field, where people, just like anybody else, we're watching the game, this is how we feel. I can check out my favorite celebrity. I mean, I can imagine now what the kids do. If I'm growing up and I'm a 9-year-old boy, I can follow Kobe Bryant. I can follow LeBron. Yeah. I could have followed Jordan. Imagine Jordan's Twitter page. Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, Magic's Twitter. Magic would be, so.
So, like, for you personally, being, you know, now that we have social media and that you're able to build your brand using these tools, like, how do you personally do that? Like, or how do athletes do that, like, that you see?
See, I guess I had more of the old school approach that I guess as an athlete, you're always kind of trained to, you know, stay to yourself, do your job, and kind of, like, have no personality and whatnot. So I think for me, I'm growing with my personality and showing people who I am, and, you know, kind of personal pics at the house or out in the event or out with some friends and whatnot. So it's really opening up just for myself, or even, I think, to my first year in the league, I didn't have Twitter. It wasn't a big thing. But now these rookies, they'll get on Twitter and they start off with 30,000-40,000 users just by being drafted, you know. So it's a young market. It's a young tool. And, you know, for myself, just trying to tap into it now and, you know, be better. You know, I'm gonna be better about Facebook, Twitter, you know, but you know, just opening up and showing that personality, showing some of my video works and everything that I'm doing. Black Hollywood, we're gonna have this shout out on Twitter, you know. So it's just growing. It's just a tool for money, and I mean there's no cap to it. I mean, right now, I think one day there will be a cap, and that's a whole other subject in itself.
Well, I mean, it's hard to be, because one of the things that, you know, we see at the Super Bowl with these athletes, because it's not just the athletes who are playing in the game, but there's athletes from, you know, it's the Super Bowl, so everybody's there.
What did Kaepernick say? Kaepernick, I think he's been in some Twitter trouble. I think he tweeted something out or said something, and now he's found his way to kind of be a topic of discussion, you know. Yep. So, I mean, like you said, while you're playing relevant in the game, there's all this frenzy going on, and if I'm an athlete, I'm just throwing my phone away. And if I'm getting ready to play in the Super Bowl, or if I have a game, I'm throwing my phone away. I don't want to hear nothing. I don't want to see anything. Some guys are spurred by it. And as an athlete, it's tough to see that this random guy sees it at the wrong moment, and he writes, "You hate, you suck. You're the worst thing ever."
Throw up your whole vibe.
Some people love you. You're like, "You're the best thing ever. We love you, man." Yeah. You know, but going into a game like that, you literally have to shut off every media outlet, every angle, you know, in the world, pretty much.
Yeah, so I'd also like, for me, I'm wondering about I do want to get your opinion on, but last week we talked about Richard Sherman.
Yeah. Talk to me.
So we talked about Richard Sherman and how, you know, what happened in that with how we all as a culture reacted, how Twitter reacted, how social media reacted, and then how we, you know, sort of retracted, you know, and then sort of went back around. Well, how did you see, as a professional athlete, when you saw that whole thing unfold, how did you perceive that moment, and how did you perceive the backlash, and then the affirmation afterwards?
I think if I'm the NFL, I obviously kind of reprimand it, but I love it because so many people want to see Richard Sherman now. Mm-hmm. His popularity from what he said to Crabtree after the game, the whole interview is unreal now, and he's kind of been saying little things like that. He doesn't hold his tongue, but after he said that, it just blew up. So for himself, obviously everybody's on him. Everybody has an opinion, but that's what makes him who he is.
Right.
That's the attitude that he takes in. And I know, you see beyond all the kind of crazy, wild, competitive comments that he makes, he's a very intelligent, like, guy. Like, the dude knows what he's talking about. Sure. He knows what he's doing.
He's a Stanford guy.
I love the comment that he said, that people go, they see a football player with dreadlocks and they get so excited to say that he's this thug from Compton. And he's like, "No, I have a degree from Stanford. I'm very well spoken, and my parents raised me the right way to stay out the streets. But I am competitive, and I love the sport that I play."
I want to ask you this. What do you think about athletes being more outspoken in sports. Like, a lot of athletes kind of stick to the script. Like, they go through the media training and they, you know, they give like the very, you know, PC diplomatic answers. What about like the athletes that had that Muhammad Ali flair, that had that Ali energy? Like, what do you think about that?
I think it's tough because if the athletes were allowed to be outspoken after a game to say they, oh, I can't stand the refs or I can't stand somebody, whatever, they're allowed to do that, it would bring more revenue to the game. But at the same time, it would take away from the ethics of the game to shut up and play basketball, to do the things right, to, you know, have a selfless attitude, team first attitude, you know, but I believe it would draw more money in. So I'm against it because I wouldn't want to see my sport turn into a circus and whatnot. But it, I know, you know, players have grown popularity from that. Either this, you know, this infamous personality, you know, Richard Sherman or, you know, a couple of ball players have done that. You know, JR has made a couple comments, you know, and JR is a great dude, very humble, very, you know, great dude. But you just see this image of him that he's this wild outcast. I mean, Matt, you know, my teammate Matt Barnes is it, you know, had a couple comments and be, oh, Matt, we can't stand, but he's one of the best teammates I've ever had, you know.
Well, this is, I'm curious, let me ask you about that, because you have a situation as a professional athlete, you have a lot of entities that you represent. So whether you're, so for you, in your case, you have the NBA, which is the National Basketball Association, which is its own entity, like the NFL is. Then you have the Clipper organization, which is its own entity that falls under that. And then some guys, you have, you know, individual sponsors, whether they're shoes or other people, other folks that you have to answer to. How much do you, are you allowed to do individually as how much, what is your responsibility when you're tweeting and out in the world in social media as it relates to these people? I mean, how much is the NBA being like, Ryan, don't do that, or the Clippers said, is it one rule? Is there no rules? Is it a different set of rules?
The straight out rule, obviously there's some common sense. I'm not going to, you know, put in code a diss to your coach or something like that, you know.
You but
clearly, no, but no, some there's, some, there's some that have. But obviously, you know, no cussing, no tweeting out, you know, a hour before or an hour after a game, I believe. And I think that's just a good rule just because it
that's
saves
a cool down
your emotions. Yeah, your emotions. Right after the game, we can't stand it, you know. So I think that saves us also. But, you know, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. I can see both ways. I can see both ways. And, you know, who knows? There may be a lawsuit where, I mean, it is, it's not civil. It's not really the American way that, you know, we're kind of censored, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, it protects who we are. And, you know, I also believe as a professional athlete, you have a responsibility. You mold generations. You mold these kids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Richard Sherman has to understand, as he told Crabtree, he sucked. You know, this 10-year-old kid at the football game goes, he sucks. Don't ever put him on me, and repeats exactly what Richard Sherman just said.
Yeah.
Now, is Richard Sherman a criminal? We need to crucify him? No, but we do have a obligation to the next generation to humble them, to teach them the right way as we were taught. Now, nothing against taking away our emotions or how we feel, but doing it in a classy way that you would want your son or daughter or nephew or these next generation of kids to act.
That's right. I feel that. I respect that. I just want to read this line about the Super Bowl and these stats. Like in 2011, 2.8 million tweets went out. That grew to 14 million in 2012, 24 million in 2013. So I just imagine, like, being that the game's being streamed this year, like, you know, with more tablets, more mobile devices, people interacting with the content much differently this year, like how big those numbers will grow this year.
Well, let me ask you, like, for me, like, I noticed that for me, the way I consume sports, this happened for me about 3 years ago, I realized this. When I'm sitting down watching watching the NBA or when I'm watching the Clippers, whoever it is, or I'm watching the Niners, what I'm doing, I have all my devices out. So I've got the TV going.
Yeah.
I've got my computer.
Yeah.
And I'm actually checking real time. I'm checking Twitter. I'm checking reactions from all of my favorite people, you know, whether it's Bill Simmons or Jason Whitlock or whoever.
It's almost like work. It's like work. It's not a popcorn experience anymore.
I got my phone because I'm tweeting my homie, whatever, you know, whatever it is. I'm looking at the game. And so a lot of it, it's an interesting experience. So I'm really curious as to, like, how is that the same way you consume it? But I'm really curious, and I don't care about you for this moment, but I'm curious how you, as a professional athlete, when you're watching, do you consume it in the same way or do you consume it in a different way?
I'm like you. I've got two phones out. I've got the game going on. you know, two TVs. then I've got my laptop out checking my fantasy football scores.
Yep, that's another thing.
And it does. It scares me because if you listen to us right now, it's going to be the next thing and the next thing after that and then the next thing after that. And, I mean, you know, we're going to be like couch potatoes.
I mean, next year we'll have the Google Glass. I'll have a Google Glass on one eye, fantasy football, fantasy score, this, squinting on one eye, trying to check something. Like, I don't know.
So I know you're a 49ers fan, but who is your pick for the Super Bowl?
I mean, we lost in the Super Bowl already. Yeah. We lost to Seattle, but, I'll put my fanship aside. And, you know, Seattle has something special going with them this year, and I believe they'll take it home. They have a team that can get after Peyton Manning and, you know, man up, and he's always had problems with that. But, you know, Peyton has the experience thus far in Super Bowl. So I think Seattle just has that special kind of glow that they got this year, and, you know, we didn't have it. They were the better team. But I think Seattle takes it, but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, high scoring, favors Broncos. If it's low, you know, Seattle's got it.
I got no comment.
No comment?
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I really, really am not. Maybe Sunday morning I'll wake up and I'll be like, you know what? Let me just try to. I have no Super Bowl plans yet. I haven't locked in my plans. Never happens to me, ever.
But you know what? You know we're the better team. You know we were better than Seattle, but you know we didn't have our stuff together this year.
Apparently not.
We didn't. You know we didn't. We can't lie. We didn't. We had a valiant push, but we weren't. We didn't do things right.
Cap, we've been a long, long time. We had, you know, NFC, that wouldn't turn into a sports show, but like NFC championship, we're a drop punt away from the Super Bowl.
Yep.
2 years ago, we made the Super Bowl last year. Yep. We're Richard Sherman, phenomenal play away from the Super Bowl this year. I'll take it. It's still tough. So we got Kaepernick's got a long time to go.
Yeah.
We have a long, well-coached team. But moving on, let's get out of the Super Bowl for a second.
Let's get into the Super Bowl.
No, we got to get into you, star here. UCLA star.
I'm with it.
Pasadena Muir's high school star here.
I've known Ryan for a long, I've known him since college. I've known him since the UCLA days, and I've seen him, evolve and grow.
Yeah.
And he's a stand-up, amazing guy. Like, a lot of people don't know all the community work that he's doing. Like, he's into a lot of things. He's very giving and selfless. But you're also a big tech guy, and you love gadgets, you love products, and I really want to talk to you about that. Like,
let's talk.
You went to E3?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. Like, what was your experience at E3?
Love E3, by the way.
I was blown away because I always heard about it, or I couldn't really get access to it, or I really didn't know when it was going on, or, you know, wasn't in Los Angeles at the time, but I loved it because they brought video games to life. They brought my favorite video game to life, and it may be in one tech, I think a mech game, we saw a 40-foot statue. I got to meet the makers, the Madden strategy guy. They had a whole thing set up. They had a zombie exhibition. They had a Dance 360 thing we did, and we're literally on the stage dancing with the dancers, going through the moves, and the sensors picking me up from about 30 or 40 feet away.
Yeah.
But it blew me away to just bring these games to life. I think, you know, we saw PlayStation. We saw all the little PlayStation characters walking around in real time. But it's just like, this is real. This video game thing. Right. And, how it was grown. So I loved it.
That was kind of my next question.
Candy store.
Are you more of a Xbox One guy or a PS4 guy?
I'm an Xbox guy, but with the new makeup, the PS4 is a better system right now.
Uh-oh.
And the Xbox, but you know what? When Xbox always starts, it has a lot of kinks. It's not really there yet, and it ultimately ends up being the better system. And they'll come in, and Microsoft will, you know, revamp the whole system, essentially.
Yeah. So I'm just on the gaming thing. So I'm a huge gamer myself, and I don't miss E3. Tell me, like, what your relationship, your history game, like, what? Tell me, take me through your systems. I mean, back then, I'm older than you, so I go back to the 2600. But were you like a Super NES guy? Were you like a Sega Genesis dude? Were you like a Sega Saturn? Or were you take me through what you played?
I was spoiled. I started with the Nintendo. I couldn't get the Atari.
Yep.
And then I got the Sega, and you couldn't tell me nothing.
Yep.
and then I didn't get Super Nintendo. I got Sega Genesis.
Okay.
And then I got Sega Saturn.
Yeah.
And then from there, I believe it was Xbox.
Right.
And it's like, you couldn't tell me anything with the Sega Saturn.
Yeah.
You plugged it in, you pushed it into the Sega and all that.
I was with them. So, because it was like, there's a lot of demarcation. It was for a while there was Nintendo or Sega.
Right.
I was always a Sega cat, you know. And then after a while became Sony, became PlayStation or Xbox.
Yeah, right.
I've always been an Xbox cat. So you're saying, I'm bringing this up to now, you're really saying on this next generation of systems, you're really like, you're on the PS4, actually the Xbox One, which has got a lot of sort of mixed reviews. PS4 has got a lot of fantastic reviews. Where do you?
I'm a Xbox guy.
Yeah.
So it kind of pains me to say that. And right. I thought the computer, I mean, excuse me, the controller would get a lot slimmer. You know, PlayStation, hands down, has the best controller. But, you know, it pains me to say that. But so I'm going to stick with the Xbox. I believe in the long run, it will be the better system. It has the kinks. But the PS4, I mean, I think they just try to do too much. I don't like when the system tries to rob me. Every time I get on the game, I have to, you know, register it to my system, or I have to be online. You know, what if I'm a kid that's not online? I don't have the internet. I can't afford it. I don't have a good server, you know? So, I mean.
And what do you think about the future of consoles in general? Because I'm a console gamer. I've never been like a computer gamer. I've never been like a, you know, that kind of guy, mouse. Yeah. I've always been a console gamer. But, you know, the consoles are kind of maybe running its course. Xbox has done a lot to build a console that is, they want to be your entertainment system. You want it to be, you can watch TV on it. You can get your movies. You can get your internet. I understand where they're going, but do you think consoles are here to stay? Is this the last generation? Think they'll be gone and we'll be doing, getting it all through Apple TV or something?
I don't know if Apple is going to partner with Sony or something like that and create this ultimate TV box, Xbox, PlayStation type, you know, TV, DVD system.
I mean, it could just be in the TV. We better get a box.
And then DirecTV partners in, and, you know, you buy a script. So I think that's the future of one of those huge partnerships. Obviously, they make their money individually, but it's getting to the point where, I mean, I can live off my Xbox, and I can YouTube, I can search everything. The web, I can do everything. Or I can kind of live off my TV. Now the TV's kind of interactive or has apps. I'm like, what if my TV need an app for?
Yeah. I want to ask you this. Like, you say you're a big Madden guy, you play 2K.
Yeah.
Like, what is it like playing yourself in the game?
I'm disappointed because my rating's not a lot better. But I don't think it's really hit me, you know, but you can get on the game and you can play as yourself, you know. The inappropriate thing would be play with myself, you know, so I'm going to be careful. I'm going to play as myself in the game. It's just huge. And just that interaction to kids. I knew everybody in the NBA because I played NBA Live. I knew everybody in Madden, in the NFL, because I played Madden, you know, so that impact is huge to kids. Or kids may know me better from a video game or something like that. So I'm going to demand my ratings get a lot higher so I can be used more.
You bring up a very interesting point because, you know, I came up, again, I'm back in my day. No, but I've been playing, I go back to NBA Live 95, so I've been playing for a minute. You know, I played with Jordan and Dominique and all those guys as well. But there's two questions. The first question is, what is it like, the flip side of his question is, what is it like having been in a gamer and then playing all these folks as, I mean, you were obviously a standout high school athlete and a standout college athlete, but still, even as a collegian, and as a high schooler, you're still playing.
I was a lot
Kobe
worse.
And all these other guys. I mean, when you see all these guys and being out there actually seeing them and playing with them, what was that experience like to you? Or did it not, you know, faze you?
Nah, you know, everything went so fast. I think just from graduating to going to the NBA draft and then getting into the NBA. And then, you know, I remember when they just looking over my first game, I'm like, wow, that's Kobe right there. I'm about to go guard this guy. Or I'm about to go against him. Wow, that's Shaq. Okay, I've looked up this guy on TV for years, you know, so, you know, there's definitely prestige to it. And, I mean, it's huge. And, you know, it's funny, I'll speak to the gaming category. Well, I'm disappointed my rating's not higher because I would go for 80 with myself and I would find a way to use some type of exploit to make myself score the ball every single time. I mean, who wouldn't?
I want to move into this territory. Like, what are some of the products that Ryan Hollins likes? Like, what are some of your favorite, like, devices? What are some of your favorite apps? Like, kind of like, give us a rundown.
Okay. Let's pull out my phone. Let's go apps. Umail. I like to use Umail so I can see my missed calls directly.
I didn't know what that is. Yeah.
you know, essentially, if you get a missed call or you live in a bad service, it'll shoot you a message and say, hey, you just missed this call, or hey, got a voicemail, and then you can see the voicemail right off. So people in bad areas, I'm like, wow, I love it. You know, now my email always goes through, you know.
I can download email.
Yeah.
What else?
Traffic. I check the traffic, Intrix traffic, beat the traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll see if the traffic's bad. I will admit I'm a huge Clash of the Clans player.
Okay.
I'm playing Clash of Clans, a very huge game and a little juvenile, but I've been hooked into it.
What about the old standby Candy Crush? Are you on that?
I'm not going to call out names. I'm not going to call out names, but there are some guys playing Candy Crush. Playing Candy Crush on the plane and hooked into grown NBA. I'm not going to put them out.
Wow.
I refuse. Wow. But they're playing there's about two or three guys actively playing Candy Crush.
Right.
Fog the World. Click it and you kind of mark wherever you're going. Obviously, I check my fantasy football. I'm a Yelper.
Yep.
Amazon should have never made this app because I'm addicted to Amazon. And like, I feel like you just get yourself a little present every time. And it's like present to me. But the best part is that you forgot you ordered it. So when you get home, it's like somebody got you a present, but it was you.
Yeah. I love it.
Are you iPhone or Android?
I'm iPhone.
iPhone.
I am starting to like Android. I have an Android tablet and, you know, I just like how it's more open. You know, the streaming capabilities, the, you know, different apps, less restrictions for you hackers out there. I plead the fifth, but,
now someone of sort of your, you know, I would say your beans, you have the benefit of being able to like try out a lot of different things. Man, I know a lot of people have both devices. They'll have like, you know, back in the day, I have the BlackBerry and the iPhone. I got that Android and this. And are you that guy? Will you try them both out and then sort of use them both? Or are you a loyalist?
I'm a little bit of bold, but you got to convince me. Like, I was a BlackBerry guy, like, BlackBerry for life.
Yeah,
I'll kind of get an iPhone, but iPhone wasn't that good yet. And then slowly but surely, my BlackBerry started to break down, and the iPhone got a little cooler. And I would just use the iPhone just for the apps. I wouldn't talk on it because it was something about I had to be able to press the buttons and call to the convenience. I hated having to touch this thing that wasn't anything to touch that showed up, you know, so... Now I'm double iPhone, and now I see the Android, you know, with this large, big screen and all these capabilities, and I kind of want to, you know, play around with both. So I'm a loyalist, but I understand. Once you show me, I'm rolling with it.
Right, cool. I'm the same. I'm a loyalist. I was the same way. I was BlackBerry for like, well, this is like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm early adapter on iPhones. I've been iPhone ever since. I'm not looking back. Early adapter on Mac.
Yeah,
not looking back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was Team BlackBerry for
Xbox,
ages.
I'm not looking back.
We have a lot in common. I feel like you're speaking. Like I feel like you're telling my story in tech right now. You're
49ers.
You're telling my story. Yeah.
Hilarious. We had a phone conversation. We were talking about Google Glass.
Google Glass.
So you're interested in that? I heard you was trying to get one.
Listen, I want to get it. I want to get it. I didn't want to look like my man from Star Trek walking around. I admit.
Jordan LaForge.
I think it was, you know, I admit I didn't want to be that guy because I kind of despised the guys with the Bluetooth that walk around the old, you know, 50-year-old black dude. Hey, hey, bro, hey, hold on. You have a Bluetooth. Hey. I didn't want to be that guy, but with the glass. And you know that uncle that you have, and you can't tell him nothing that he didn't match his outfit to that Bluetooth, you know?
But that might be me, actually.
Oh, man.
I'm not that old.
So that was my thing with the Google. But I guess it's looking a little cooler, but I like the idea. But I just the user capability. I don't know if I'm going to charge that and charge my phones and then throw it on every single day and go work out or go hoop. Or I feel like I may use it for a week and then set it down. That's my fear, to pay a lot of money to do that, you know?
Yeah, it's tough. We were at CES a couple weeks ago, so we had an opportunity to check out the Google Glass. And I don't know, I like everything that it does, but I just really, I can't get with the whole attachment. I can't really get with it psychologically.
See, that's the thing. Like, coming out with the next generation where it's actually stylized glasses. It could be your prescription glasses. It could be your Ray-Bans. Could be your sunglasses.
Yeah.
And it'll have the Google Glass in it. And that's what's going to be happening within the next year.
because like this generation is more for developers, yeah. So the next generation is going to be more for consumers, and it's going to be more stylized. Yeah. So that nerd geek will be kind of shimmed away.
But I mean, those are $2,000 glasses on your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not setting those down. I'm not going to hoop and take those things off. You know,
I mean, and the next generation is, you know, in 2 or 3 years, we'll have the contacts,
right?
And then, so that's a whole other thing. I don't know if I can get with all that, but I like the idea of it. So what about consumer electronics? We're at CES. What about consumer electronics? What do you? I mean, like again, mm-hmm. what's your TV situation? Are you excited about the 4K? Are you one of those dudes going to be running an order? Do you have your 4K TV already ordered? Are you like thinking about it? Like where are you on the consumer side?
This is where I am. I kind of fell into the 3D TV thing, got mm-hmm. the glasses, and literally never used them since I originally got them.
It's sitting right there.
So right now I'm waiting. You know, the next technology that's going to wow me is if they create a 3D TV that you don't need the glasses and it does not hurt my eyes and it works clearly. Well, it works good.
They got it.
I got to see it.
They got it.
Okay, and it works clearly. That's what I'm waiting on. And it's not going to cost $15,000 for me to buy because I'm incredibly cheap.
They don't got that.
Okay. Okay. I'm sure it costs, you know, and it, you know, works good with the lights on, lights off, all that, you know. So that's what I'm waiting for. You know, I'm very, very cheap, like I said, so I don't want to spend, you know, but I'm a tech guy because if it just blows my mind, I'll have to do it, you know.
I hear you.
And then what about the house? What about the audio situation? Are you the wireless Bluetooth Jambox dude? You got the Sonos all through the crib? Like, what do you got?
You know what? We just got a Sonos. Mm. And I have a Denon amplifier at home, and it plays through the AirPlay, and I'm able to connect. So I'm very spoiled to that I can just click in through the house and use that AirPlay feature. And the Sonos, I don't like this setup that I have to go and, you know, I like to be able to set up stuff myself. I think they can make it a lot simpler to do, you know, to be able to set up and use. And then I don't like that I can't just, you know, click into it through the AirPlay. I have to go to its own app. So I think they're trying to keep it too tight. I wish it was a lot looser, you know, just AirPlay. I want to play what's on my iPhone. Now, if I want to go an extra and stream Pandora, it shows up on my AirPlay, and I use it. And I guess that's Apple's kind of hold in their fight with everybody. It's like an inner struggle. Everybody wants to make Apple, like, wean everybody off of Apple, you know. And I agree with that because Apple is definitely abusing their power right now.
Yes. What about this? As an athlete, what about, like, the wearable technologies? Are you into, like, the fuel bands and the, you know, the fit bands and of that nature?
I love the idea of the fuel bands. They're just not ready for someone to play basketball in yet. Mm-hmm. And
why is that? What is that?
They fall off.
Okay.
Yeah. They're going to fall off. You're not going to use it. They're going to fall completely off, you know? Mm. So obviously that being a little sleeker, a little tighter to the wrist and whatnot, and, you know, being accurate, you know, it's funny. I had a fuel band, excuse me, and I'm going and working out. Excuse me.
All right.
And my friend's wife is a, you know, she does kind of kickboxing and boxing. And I'm a professional athlete, so I'm hooping all day, but I'm just running and she's boxing. So with this fuel band, she, you know, it appeared that she burned like 10 times more calories than me. And I was very upset because she was boxing. And I'm like, you know, if I just boxed, it would look like I was doing a lot more too. So I was a little disappointed that she did a lot too, but that, you know, I didn't get my credit for playing ball, you know?
Right.
So I was a little hurt, you know? I was a little sore about it, you know?
I hear you, man. Well, I do want to touch on, being that we are, you know, approaching All-Star break, I want to talk about the Clippers a little bit and, like, kind of, like, what your ambitions are for the remaining part of this season.
Talk to me.
Like, talk to me about the team, and talk to me about what's going on and what your hopes and aspirations are.
It's a work in progress. Everybody likes to go, oh, you guys are so good. You're so excuse me. You're so great. But we're a work in progress right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because where that differs from last year is that we're taking a step back in order to take a step forward. And our step forward is we want to get to a championship. And I'm not saying it's going to be this year, but we're getting more and learning through Doc, more appreciative of what we need to do, the little things that may blow up in a playoff game or may cost us that series, or, you know, that we don't want to regret it later. You know, we want to, you know, learn from it now and get past it. So we're taking that step back in order to take a step forward. And it's not a question of our talent. It's, you know, putting together and learning those little things to be a champion. And just, man, it's such a,
every champion on any level, it's such a highly competitive sport, and just what it takes, the discipline, the sacrifice, the from every single guy, and no guy's bigger than the team, and everybody doing the right thing and putting in the work, and then you got to be healthy, then you got to be a little bit lucky. I mean, it's a work in progress.
What's it like playing with Doc? You know, you had a chance to play with him in Boston.
Yeah,
when you were with the Celtics, and now you know. Now that he's in L.A., like, what is it like, you know, being coached by him?
That's my thing, too, because Doc's one of my – he's one of my guys. And I grew up playing basketball, emulating Dominique Wilkins, so subsequently Doc was my guy, too.
Yeah.
I played Doc on the NBA day back in the Sega Genesis days. So I know you have a relationship with Doc. Yeah, like I said, like going up to Boston. What's it like playing with a player, you know, playing with someone of his caliber?
He's one of those coaches and one of those personalities that you're going to look back one day and you're going to be like, wow, we really appreciate what this guy did. Not just as a player, but I think, you know, we're watching a Hall of Fame coach right now because he can mix business and personal and still be a player's coach and still be his X and O's and still command the respect of a team. And it seems very simple, but that's such a hard thing to do.
It's impossible
as a coach.
I know, because there's some guys, football, basketball, some guys are X's and O guys, geniuses. Mm-hmm. Some guys, not so good, but they're like lead men.
Yes.
They're great at lead men.
Yes.
You know, other guys are, you know, good in the room, players coach, good at being your boy, you know, good at like working on drills and fundamentals. Like, it's hard to find that guy that does that all well. Yeah. You know.
So you're saying Doc Rivers is that guy.
Yeah, he's that guy, and probably like he's a degree in psychology or something. He just knows how to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, I'll run through a wall for him, and all of our guys will too. And if they won't, they're developing that understanding and respect. You know, it's nothing like playing for a coach that gives you confidence. And, when somebody has your back.
Right. So when we talk about expectations, I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but I mean, you know, the expectations in this city are pretty high. And also we have, you know, this has been traditionally a Lakers city. I grew up in the city. Grew up in the city.
Yeah.
Traditionally Lakers city. But that seemed to, the Staples Center has seemed to be shifted a little blue, you know, a little red, blue. So there's a lot. But with that comes a lot of responsibility in this town. And I mean, what are you feeling those expectations? Like if it's not deep in the playoffs or championship, is it a failure or are you guys just taking it one step at a time?
Those are from us, not so much fan-driven.
Mm-hmm.
The fans feel that way, or the fans want to fight after every single game or whatever, or the Laker-Clipper talk will never go away, you know, understood. And we're fighting just to get our first one. We'd love to have that one. And let's not forget how many championships the Lakers have and have put up. So, I mean, you got to give respect where it's due, and I think we're working to be the best team that we can be, and we know the expectations there, and you can't live or play for expectations. You have to play to be the best that you can be and your own personal goals, because if I go out and play for the fan that just thinks we should win it, I'm not going to truly play. If I play because it's in my heart, because it's what we want to achieve, because we're coming together and doing the things the right way, you know, you have a chance at it. So we know it and we feel it and we appreciate it. And, you know, we take on that responsibility by making it ourselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, me and Joe, you know, wish you the best, bro.
Word.
And, man, we hope you're going to get that ring this year, man.
Yeah.
Real shit.
We definitely want to see it. Like, you know, I would love to be at that parade, the Clipper parade.
Appreciate it.
Clipper victory parade in Los Angeles. So.
Why not?
But that's it. I think we're almost out. We're almost out of here, but I did. Well, go ahead.
Where can we find you? Where can we find, you know, what are your handles?
Yeah. Twitter at the Ryan Hollins. Instagram, Ryan Hollins. Facebook, Ryan Hollins. UCLA.
And you have a blog?
Yeah, it's on Fox Sports West. Just 2 hands, 7 feet, just a little bit of my mind and, you know, just hitting on some topics and, you know, giving a player the opportunity to kind of, you know, speak my mind and how I feel about some things. So that's my blog, my opportunity.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us here at
Geek
Nerd
guys.
Tech. Thank you for letting your geek, your nerd, and your tech side hang out. Appreciate all your comments and you hanging out with us. Akili Shine, where can we find you?
You can find me at Akili Shine on Instagram and Twitter. I just want to say, man, you're a great dude, man.
Appreciate it.
We wish you much success.
Appreciate it.
So you can find me on Twitter at Joe K. Braswell and Instagram at Joe Braswell. My Instagram game is coming up. So follow me. I will be posting some shit very soon. Thank you for joining us on Geek Nerd Tech. We will see you again next week.
Yo, give me that 16, bruh.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Dario Kristen, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood Elevated.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.